More often, he's really good.
Hey, we'll call the committee to order, and we have a quorum. We'll take a committee substitute for Senate Bill 134 at this time, and hear from the prime sponsor, Senator Crocker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier this year, Senator Bradley in the Senate and I discussed some of the priorities of the National Association of Independent Businesses, and one of the bills that they were most concerned about was a version of this bill that addressed the question of paperwork in government. Their suggested version of the bill had what I considered one defect. It set up a commission to address this problem, and it seemed to me that it was, while it might have reduced the paperwork, was going to increase the size of state government. So we made a revision which designated the Commissioner of Administration as being responsible, giving it among his existing duties the additional duties of addressing the question of paperwork in state government, particularly as it impacted not state government, but the citizens that had to deal with government. As the bill was considered in the Senate State Affairs Committee, the suggestion was made that instead of designating one department head who might have, even though certainly the present commissioner would not, designating one department head who had to supervise not only his own department but other departments, that there might at least be the possibility, if not the reality, of a conflict of interest, would designate somebody in the governor's office. This worked out rather well, since we found that there are positions in the governor's office that are vacant, that have not been filled all of this fiscal year, and so there are actually positions that the governor could use for that if he felt it was necessary to designate or to create a new job, if it was simply designating an existing position and giving them that responsibility, he could do it. In any event, it is left up to the governor, since he appoints all of the commissioners. The bill does address what is a problem that impacts small businesses particularly hard. Members of my staff talk to people that operate clothing stores, to commercial fishermen, to filling station operators, to a wide selection of businesses, and they uniformly said that the paperwork requirements of government were one of the biggest problems they had. In fact, many small businesses said that it was such a problem that all they could do was to hire an accountant or a bookkeeper or somebody else to address it. I think, while it is a problem with big businesses, that they probably are geared up in their operations to handle it better, and so it really does weigh pretty heavy on small businesses. In addition, it does affect some individuals, just the frustrating aspect of having to furnish to one department a whole information on a form which exists in another department, and yet agencies some of the time require that individuals furnish the information again rather than them obtaining the information themselves for an agency that already has it. After the Senate had passed the bill, I noticed in the Christian Science Monitor on their March 24th edition that there was a story out of New York that said authorities estimate that $100 of every bill that relates to college tuition, and the fact that college tuition continues to rise. Authorities estimate that $100 of every bill is to cover the cost of complying with paperwork required by the federal government. Not much we can do about the federal government, but it does seem that we can designate somebody in state government to address this problem, and that's what the bill does.
Are there any questions to the sponsor or representative, I think?
I want to announce a technical one. Why do we have to create a separate chapter for paper laws and paperwork?
Because we're doing this by statute rather than somebody doing it from the administrative point of view. This clearly says that somebody has to have the responsibility. I think probably the governor could do it himself if he wanted to, but if we're going to make sure that there is a responsibility for that and it's clear who it is, we have to pass a bill to do it.
Well, yeah, but can't we amend existing law as a section rather than creating another chapter of law?
That's possible, but you might want to ask the legislative draftman why, but I don't see that that makes
that's
much
just
difference.
A technical.
Yeah. Any further questions?
Let me make sure I understand the purpose. Do you want, is this kind of an answer to all these complaints you get out there from all the business people that have so many forms to fill out?
What this, I think it is. It what it says is somebody has to take the responsibility in state government for making sure those forms are kept at a minimum. There obviously will be instances in which you just do have to obtain some information, and in that case, then the business or the individual would have to supply it. But it does say that one person out of the 10,000 or whatever it is state employees that we have has the job of making sure that that paperwork is kept to a minimum. So that if you think the paperwork is too much, you know that there's at least one person you can go to that has the responsibility to do something about it.
Chancey, and this individual would be located in the Department of Administration?
No, the original version of the bill placed it in the Department of Administration. It would be up to the governor to determine where it was located. He would be in the office of the governor technically, but how he worked would be up to the governor. We left the governor that much flexibility.
Yeah, my point was he'd be partially exempt and thus, might be a little more unfettered in his advocacy to reduce paper.
I don't think so. But he would be in the office of the governor.
Was there just a little message you know about what he's using?
As far as I know, there shouldn't be any fiscal impact from it. I haven't seen a fiscal note if there is one. Commissioner Allen is here, and he may want to comment on it. But it's my opinion that there are a couple people right now who are trying to address this problem, and that it probably can be done without any fiscal impact. The only real fiscal impact, it seemed to me, would be whatever salary is necessary. And like I say, there are vacant positions in the office of the governor now. Secondly, to the extent it's necessary to revise any forms, there could be some initial cost. It seemed to me, though, that it's clear that once you revise the forms, that there should be an actual reduction in expenditures, because what you're saying is that you're going to get the money from the information from agencies that already have it, rather than going having to have people in each department who constantly collect from the public information that some is on file someplace else in state government.
Mr. Nackett.
On the other hand, doesn't it seem like that's such a central storehouse of basically a big biographical sketch or a biographical volume on each individual citizen?
Well, the question is whether it's going to be duplicated or not. This bill doesn't do anything about expanding or contracting the amount of information that the state has about an individual. It addresses the question of how many times that's duplicated. And I think your point is well taken, that if what you were trying to do was to expand the amount of information that government had, there might be a problem. But this doesn't expand it or contract it. It simply says it won't be endlessly duplicated.
And that Joe Blow on the street doesn't have to fill 15 forms to get a $300 contract. Or
that's right.
Well, yep. Maybe just more comment than a question. But I guess we'll make the question, but having had some experience in there, knowing how forms are invented daily by different levels every time you have a call gets in a form.
Well, it may or may not. I tend to think that it will do, but it seemed to me that it depends on how it's administered. And in the first place, if the coordinator makes it clear to all other agencies that before a form is submitted to that person for a decision, that the department requesting the use of that new form itself has to check with the other departments to determine if they are using a form similar to that or if they are obtaining information that would also be obtained by the form, that probably one person can coordinate it. But it depends on the implementation of it.
Senator, do you see this following in the spirit of the governor's task force and review, whatever that efficiency thing?
I certainly think that it does follow in the spirit, even though I could find no specific recommendation on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Lane? Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're pleased to take the opportunity today to talk to you about this bill. We were not called to talk about it over while it was in the Senate, and had some comments related to it and some thoughts that we wanted to give to one of the committees of referral, so we're pleased to have an opportunity to do that here. I think, first of all, there's one thing that we need to make very clear. The administration is in complete agreement with the concept that there is probably an awful lot of paperwork that has to be filled out by people in the state of Alaska when they try to deal with the government in any way, shape, or form. And as an example, to go back to the federal side, is that they just completed a study of their internal paperwork requirements. It took 2 years. They spent they had about 250 people working on it, spent about $8 to $9 million, and the end result was a heck of a report that didn't do much of anything. So we want, I think, to avoid those kinds of things and think that there should probably be a positive stance taken on Senator Croft's bill, and are prepared here today to offer you some thoughts and ideas and some changes on that bill that we think would, in fact, put some teeth into it, carry forth the full intent of helping the citizens of Alaska in terms of dealing with the paperwork requirements of state government. So let me start down with a couple of the things that I have here and some of the thoughts I have, which we would probably want to give you, which would also result in possibly a committee substitute coming out of this committee if you saw fit to take those under advisement. First of all, we agree with Mr. Croft's first intent to place this function within the Department of Administration. We think that that's the department that services state government, and that's the one that can, in fact, provide the support to carry out this function very, very well. We think it ought to be placed in the commissioner's office within the Department of Administration. From that position, you can create a PX or partially exempt position that would be a little bit unfettered, if you will, with some of the problems people would see if a classified position handled this particular job. We don't want it in the office of the governor for a variety of reasons, but let me get very, very simple and non-political about it. We have been trying all of this year to clean out of the office of the governor all of the line functions so that the office of the governor is truly a policy-making and executive office. This is very clearly a line function and belongs in a line department to carry it out. So we don't think that we need to place this in the office of the governor, because it just again places, if you will, a burden on that office in terms of having to monitor a line function. Secondly, is the job is not going to be very simple. I've had some experience this year in trying to cross 15 state departments to get them to implement something. And Senator Croft made an interesting comment in his finance committee to me once regarding a particular department and said, if you can't make them do something, and we in the legislature can't make them do something, who can? And we sometimes wondered about that. But nonetheless, we think that this job is going to need some teeth. It's going to need some power. And I think it can be handled by the Department of Administration out of the commissioner's office in the following way. Mr. Lathine's comment about, do you need to introduce or write a complete new section of the law as opposed to amending an existing statute, I think needs to be looked at. You may be able to do that within existing law. Secondly, we think that the job is going to take a little bit of money. And we have prepared a fiscal note for you with a couple of options in it. And this is why we think it'll take some dollars. First of all, what you need to do is to make a complete review of the forms being used by all of the departments that the public has to deal with. And that's not going to be an easy undertaking. We have had a person in DP Squared Policy Development and Planning this year taking a look at just the natural resource permitting applications, and is in the process of writing what we refer to as a cookbook that is kind of the layman's guide on how to get through the whole natural resource permitting problem. And it's a rather difficult task. So you need to take a look at all the forms that are being used. You need to take a look at why we're using them. This gets into some of your sunset legislation as a program requiring the forms even, you know, worthwhile to have around. And so you need to take a look at all of that. You then need to take a look at the forms that we do use, the data we do collect, where it all goes, how it's all used. That's going to be something that takes a little bit of time. We've given you a couple of thoughts on how to do that. One is you can have, alternative one, in the Commissioner of Administration's office, a forms expert. The person probably needs a graphic artist, and they probably need a clerk typist to work with them, and they're going to spend the minimum of 1 year going all the way through what we do use. The other option is that you can hire probably a consultant that is an expert in forms control. I'm not. And that person can, who has had a lot of experience at it, can look at what's being used, why it's being done, so on and so forth, and can in fact direct the two or three people in the commissioner's office to go on and make the necessary changes. The bill that you have places the teeth into that function. And as long as it has the teeth, then the Commissioner of Administration can move forward to implement what they find. There will undoubtedly be savings in a variety of areas, some unmeasurable in terms of less time being spent by the small business folks. And by the way, in terms of looking at forms, very often when the government looks at them, they look at just themselves. They don't go out and bother talking to the public. We think one of the critical things that this position should be doing, as we mentioned, Mr. Croft mentions that there's a lot of people that are concerned about the forms they fill out. Well, you have to identify those publics, and you have to go out and talk to them and find out the problems they have. You need to look at both sides of the issue. So we have included some dollars in here to make certain that that happens. And, excuse me, the study could then result immediately in implementation by the Commissioner of Administration as they move from department to department in terms of either eliminating forms, eliminating unnecessary duplication, possibly beefing up some forms when you eliminate others. So if you go to one place in a particular broad category area, you can have all the information put down. We, beyond that, have a couple of other things in terms of the bill itself, and I'd like to run down that and go through some of the potential amendments that we think probably should be made to carry out the intent, as we see it, of this forms reduction in terms of doing it in a very positive and a very serious manner that can really help the citizens. And first of all references to this coordinator, paperwork reduction coordinator, there on page 1 at the bottom lines 26, 27, 28, and 29, we think that you can designate the Commissioner of Administration to serve that function. And then throughout the rest of the bill, where you have the paperwork reduction coordinator, you probably want to talk about the Department of Administration, and I can provide a marked up copy if you wish, Mr. Chairman, for your administrative assistant to look this over. We agree with the items that they've listed on page 2, 1 through 10 as necessary. And if you wish to have a report made to the legislature, the Commissioner of Administration could make one. You have legislation, I think, before you to talk about knocking down the number of reports that departments print to give to the legislature and the quality of those reports. So you may decide you may not need a report on what they're doing. We also on page 4, you'd knock out of completely 2 where it says coordinator means paperwork reduction coordinator. You really don't need that if you're going to have this done by the Department of Administration, which was where we agree it should take place. Now, I guess in summary, we agree with the intent and the direction of the bill. It is something that can be a tremendous help, I think, in the long run to the citizens of the state that have to deal with the government, and as they do every single day, help eliminate some of the burdens on them and paperwork requirements. We'll continue to carry out some of the things we're now doing in some departments, and particularly the natural resource permitting area, to make life a little bit easier on people that have to deal with us. And we think you ought to put some dollars into this bill. We think you should place it into the Department of Administration and give them the intent to carry out this particular project. That way it can be done in a very positive, non-political manner that in fact gets the job done that I hope the sponsors intended it to do.
Okay, thank you, Leonard. Leonard, just as a general question, where you kept referring to teeth, to put teeth in the bill. What were those amendments that you offered that you feel, the administration feels, would put teeth in the bone?
Well, the only amendments that we offer is the change to the Department of Administration. I probably misstated myself. I think the bill has the teeth because they tell you that each agency is going to comply immediately and directly with the directives in it. And it's mandatory upon the chief executive officer of each agency or their designee to do that. I think that's very good because that will put the power it needs behind it.
Okay. I haven't seen a copy, but I got wind of I guess your fiscal note proposes option one, which is a study, and then option two, hiring a couple of people.
It's concurrent, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal note talks about hiring on option one a systems and procedures analyst, a graphic artist, clerk typist. I think that's the minimum what you're going to need, and spending about $225,000 on professional contractual services to look at the entire. All 15 state departments, the Office of the Governor, and the University of Alaska, there's 17 total, which are all of the areas that people deal with that have forms from the public. And it also would have, as a consultant's working, you have your internal people, your systems and procedures analysts, going through and making the necessary changes, checking them with the departments, checking them with the public, and then implementing them as they go. The second option does not allow you the liberty of the consultant to look at this. It just has the forms expert and a graphic artist and a clerk typist that will devote their full time to this project we have it programmed all the way out as long as you wish to keep that function going. And it just means it's going to take a little bit longer to get done because they're not going to have the extra pair of hands and feet that they need, and they also are not going to have the services of what I would say is an excellent forms control expert that they need to start this thing. So I think if we're going to do it, we ought to do it right.
So the bucks on the first proposal would be $250,000, and how much for the second?
First proposal would be $325,000, and the second proposal would be $106,000.
Okay. You don't obviously buy the rationale, or has it ever been put to you that because of the sensitiveness to this issue but the electorate, i.e. so many forums and so you know, high degree of frustration that it might not be good public policy to place the responsibility in the governor's office for a limited period of time? Obviously it's not set out in this bill, but of course any act can be amended, and have them cook up there in the office of the governor, where, I mean, it's undisputed, all textbooks say that he's the most powerful dude in the whole, you know, out of all the 50 states, and on and on and on. I mean, mercy sakes, wouldn't that be a good place to put it, just from sort of a social standpoint, for 36 months or something like that, and then you guys come back to the 11th legislature and says, okay, you've been reading these reports, whether you get them or not, and how many people read them. But, I mean, don't you think that might be sort of reasonable public policy? Has anybody made that argument to you that maybe it should start off there, and if it's a continuing thing, go to administration for its permanent home, and maybe you don't want to sort of play your, you might not want to put that into the enabling organic legislation, but...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been the recipient of what of that particular philosophy by having been asked to implement the efficiency study, where over the years that same argument's been made in committee after committee that says, well, let's just put it in the office of the governor for a little while to get it going. And those things have grown like topsy over the years, and they've stayed in the office of the governor. And so, no, I don't buy that argument, and I think if we're going to do the job right and in the interest of management and efficiency, we place it in a line department where it's going to go, and we give them the instructions to do it.
Ms. Dankwood?
You know, I'm losing less interest in this bill as the testimony goes on. Compared to what I kind of thought when I first saw it, it had a good look to it, because maybe we could cut down on some paperwork. Now we can build a bureaucracy and hire a bunch more people and things. And I agree with Mr. Lane. I think that's probably what would be necessary to do the job. Somehow or other, it just dawns on me. I think most of the complaints I've got from my constituents deal with the necessity for them in the first place, all the regulations and stuff. It isn't so much in the myself, maybe someone else has had a different experience than me, but I think we've legislated all this need for all these bills and regulations and papers to be filled out. If this were limited to most of the waste and forms and stuff is interdepartmental or interagency type things to get the pink and the red and yellow over it and get it circulated around, even if this were confined, and I don't know how Senator Crowell do it, but if this were confined to those forms which are sent out to the public, you get into the complete revising of all of the forms, as this mentioned in here, in each agency, and they've got thousands of them. Are we, in other words, I guess maybe I think we're getting bigger than what I really had in mind when we started, and that was dealing with any unnecessary collection of information from the public. So, am I right in assuming here, maybe Leonard can ask this, or are we getting into setting up something to look into streamlining each agency's paperwork, or just that is going out to the public?
It appears just from the bill, it's just that is going out to the public. It says distributed by agencies for the purpose of gathering information from citizens or businesses.
I'm not sure we have a problem there as much as if we get away with some regulation.
Well, that is a natural offshoot by taking a look at this, because you ask the question of why do you need the form, and then the next question is why do you need the program, or why do you need the regulation?
Well, just as an observation, I mean, I'm not sure how many honchos or, you know, or experts you have to review these forms. Obviously, I don't know much about it, but I know the state has graphic artists working for them in tourism, and I don't know if they're always busy and stuff like that. I'm not sure that somebody just couldn't be cloistered away in some small room and have the use of some secretary that isn't 100% burdened and might not cook for and report back to his superiors, whoever that might be, every month or so and sort of get the job done. There's sort of two ways to do a battle, or to do something. Either if you've got X amount to do, you can have those people that you've got doing do more of it, or you can hire more people. I mean, it's, and I guess there's some other offshoots. I'm no expert on it, but, and obviously I think we go to the latter, a deference to state employee reps. Ms. Lathine?
What do you see that this could be incorporated in existing law rather than creating another separate chapter?
Don't know. I'd have to check. I'd have to check with our drafters.
Could our legal attorney and counsel there be able to find out?
Sure.
Jill.
Yeah, why graphic art? If I remember right, there is the archives last year. I'm not sure if it ever got straightened out, but forum development was in archives.
Yeah,
and I don't believe they have any graphic artists attached.
Perhaps Mr. Sewell can answer that in terms of details.
We have a forms analyst, but they're actually working to some extent of their time as a graphic artist laying out. There's no graphic artist that works on a full-time basis. They've been asking us a long time for graphic artists, meaning the commissioner's office to reduce the budget.
You clearly have some options, Mr. Chairman, in terms of perhaps you contract us for the graphic artist time when you need them. Perhaps you can use, in taking a look at the workloads of all of the departments that have graphic artists, there may be the potential that you can use part-time or part of the time of a certain person to help. And we would certainly attempt to do that if that was the case. But I think what we wanted to lay before you is to show you is if you're going to do the job, let's do it right. And let's give it the appropriate support it needs and get the intended result that we're after. And it's going to cost us a little bit to do that. It doesn't come free.
We don't mind a little bit. It's the, mm-hmm. And of course, that's all relative.
Right.
Mr. Nakak?
Do you have any idea how many forms these people are going to have to create to get rid of forms?
No, we don't. We would hope, obviously, it would be at a minimum. And we also don't know the magnitude of the task we're dealing with. That's something else that I think you better, in terms of all candor, we ought to lay out in front of you. I mean, I don't think any of us sitting in this room knows how many forms we have sitting in state government that the public has to deal with. And so in a way, we're kind of looking at an issue that we don't know the size of it.
Mr. Kelly?
Of course, that's exactly why we need this bill. I like the bill. I think the intent is commendable, and I think it should be in the governor of the office, because I think you have to have somebody who's high enough that can be able to cross through these broad areas of local politics and agency politics and what have you. And I like the bill, and I think that the paperwork reduction coordinator can get all the help they need from the graphic artists working within the structure already.
I have a question to Mr. Sewell. This would be who does the printing for the majority of the of the forms? For
central bookkeeping, I would say.
Well, they do. You don't have print shops bid on them and stuff like that.
Oh, I think for your snap out forms, I think we do. But we're trying to even work that.
I guess there's no way of getting something for nothing, but I know, you know, the print shops have graphic artists, limited experience I have. Mr. Dankwart?
Can anybody give me an example of one form that we're talking about that goes out to the public? I know there's a lot of them ask your date of birth. There'll be a lot of them ask you where you live. You can say that's duplicated on other forms, but somewhere down in there, most everybody sends out an inquiry, has at least one question they're trying to get answered. And you've got it stationary. Maybe you have one, Senator, that you give me an example of a form that you think is a duplicate of something else.
The business license application form, duplicate some of the information that is on the articles of incorporation, for example. I think also the ESC, some of those reporting forms, for example, just two that impact businesses right there. In the area of a commercial fisherman, there's the gear license, the commercial fishing license, the limited entry permit, to name three, all three different forms right there for one particular fisherman.
They all three ask three different questions?
Obviously, they all start with the same question, which is name, and then some of them go on for one page, and some of them in the fisheries, and I forget which one, go up to as many as four pages on that. And there's some duplication. There's obviously some information that is not duplicated, but there's quite a bit that is as well.
So that's so sensitive. It's not duplicated. Are you saying just ask the same amount of questions, but ask them on one form?
And the original bill said no duplication at all, but obviously there's a certain minimum amount, name, address, in some instances maybe social security number, phone number, and the like, that there's not much reason that you couldn't duplicate it. It's a long list of questions, you know, which is pretty cumbersome, that you want to make sure there isn't any.
Or you can go one step further, you even ask, you know, is there a need for that department to ask for this form at all? They really do that.
I think that's the most pertinent question.
Yeah, it's all part of these things that have to be asked. It's all part that have to be asked.
Senator Croft.
Could I ask, what is a ballpark figure you think might be the savings as you go along on this?
I don't have any idea, Senator, until you can take a look at what the ballpark looks like. And obviously there's going to be some, but today I couldn't identify them.
Mr. McKinnon?
Yeah, I don't know how many different loan funds we've got, but there are a great number of them. Is there one standard loan application form, or is there a different one for each program?
Well, if it's coming out of different departments, there's a different one for each program in terms of if you want an agricultural loan, you'll fill that form out in the Department of Natural Resources. And yet if you want something from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, you'll fill out another loan there. If you want a student loan, you'll go over to the Commission for Post-Secondary Education and fill that out. So, and those are all different forms.
That basically ask the same information?
I think that a chunk of it would have to be the same. The financial information would be roughly the same. But I think, you know, as we just sit here, we can probably all name the forms we've had to fill out over the years in dealing with the state. And I think if we just went around this room, the list would be pretty good size.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Leonard. Appreciate it. We've got to go and hear the report on the judiciary from Chief Justice Boutchever. Can the members of the committee, could they make an evening meeting?
I can't tonight. We've got another meeting.
I have judiciary.
You have judiciary tonight. Okay. We'll come back then at the conclusion of the Chief Justice's report. Give us about 10 minutes, and then take up 364 withdrawal from Social Security. Can you guys make that?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner?
Wait, you want one man?
Hey, Billy Bob. How are you?
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
you. By God, you know, you growing that thing makes you look younger. Little cherub.
Okay, we'll just consider this an extension of the hearing we had at 1:15, but just for the record, we still have a quorum. We had under discussion a committee substitute for Senate Bill 134. That paper reduction is what's basically the feeling of the committee on that? You want to have additional testimony or? What is that suggestion, Mr. Miles? Oh. I guess that's plain enough. Does anybody care to move this bill? Yeah, we could.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think the bill as written has a fiscal, would need a fiscal, and it doesn't establish a new position. I don't think that. I don't know. The way I read it, it does not establish a new position.
The intent is to use an existing paper.
Yeah.
Should we put letter of intent with it?
We can send. What we can do is move the bill out, hold it, and crank out. An amended, we can do a state affairs fiscal note if you want. You just sign it. It's naked.
I move to pass out SB 134.
There's a motion. Any objection? I'll object just for the purpose of discussion. What do you guys think about that? Do we want to crank out a fiscal note, at least to show our feeling? I think that'd be, that'd serve probably a more practical thing than a letter of intent.
Inclusive in the motion.
Is that a further referral?
Finance.
Well, the testimony was, Mr. Chairman, as the bill was written, there was no fiscal impact, therefore they would not need a fiscal note. Now, whether the committee, I suppose we're discussing whether the committee feels that was the correct view. I would say yes, if in fact it does not establish a new position, and it would appear that it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I see no reason to. I can't see the fiscal impact.
Okay. Yeah, well, I basically concur with you. Mr. Dankworth, we have a motion before us to pass out committee substitute for Senate Bill 134.
Let me object. That's the one we were just talking about.
Yeah, that's per paperwork production bill. And there have been some sort of left-handed statement on the fiscal note. I think that my interpretation would be that some members, along with myself, feel that it's somewhat inflated, and some people would argue the sponsor's argument that it can be just taken care of with unfilled positions in the governor's office, which
Well,
there are some.
I agree, and I'll just, you know, say the same thing I did before. It started off as a good idea. If it can stick to this, and if the sponsor's correct, it, I think, you know, considering the number of state employees we have and all the vacant positions, that there wouldn't be any need to spend $250,000. I think we'll generate more paperwork than we saved in any of these bills. So I think probably what the sponsor wanted was just a conscientious somebody to get together and look real hard at where we need to cut down on this stuff and coordinate it a little bit. It sounded like we were getting big there a while ago, so I'll remove my objection.
Okay, it'll be the chair's. The chair will try to. We can pass the bill out. We'll hold it here, and try to bring before you some sort of, a consensus a committee report with possibly a fiscal note, and maybe just zero, stuff like that. Backing that up, so we can give some direction to finance when they take it up.
Well, it would appear to me. Chairman, that if the paperwork production coordinator, I love that title, is appointed, and that will in effect be the study that they were talking about in the amendment. And if there is a necessity that we spend $325,000 to affect this program, we'll certainly be told about it by the paperwork production coordinator. And but meanwhile, I think we can learn all this without spending any money, and that's why I'm in support.
Okay. Well, we don't often agree. I agree with you. Okay, so we'll pass the bill out. And we'll bring up now House Bill 364, and basically I'll just, I don't know all the people here, so I'll just, Representative Miller, did you want to lead off?
Yeah, okay. We have a copy of the file. I had Bill Rogan down here. Sure. I didn't have a chance to get the file.
We'll hold testimony at least for this point. How's 4 o'clock sound? Everybody live with 4 o'clock?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how many of you are aware of it. There is federal statutes which allows certain entities, if they want to opt out of Social Security. Certain municipalities can, and as a matter of fact, have. I think the Anchorage city of Anchorage, prior to unification, opted out. I don't know what their status is now, but I just use it as an example. The reasons for opting out, or for that matter for staying in Social Security, tend to become a little bit complicated sometimes, but basically I think you could say that people who want to opt out, their basic position is that considering the cost that both the employer, in this case the state of Alaska, and the employees pump into the system, they feel that if you took those same monies, the employee contribution and the employer dollars, the employer contribution, if you took those same monies, you could buy much better protection, much more retirement features than is currently being supplied by Social Security. This bill, House Bill 364, does not, and I want to emphasize, does not opt the state of Alaska out of Social Security. Just as one legislator, I have a strong feeling that the legislature should not make that decision. I have an equally strong feeling that the administration, the governor, should not make that decision. I feel that only one group of people should be making that decision, and that decision should be made by the people who are actually in the system, investing their monies, you know, paying in dues to the system, in other words, the employees, all of them, of the state of Alaska. Now, the procedure for opting out is this. You opt out, you give notice of your intention to opt out, and then you've got 2 years to study the situation and make a final decision. I guess about a year and a half ago, the state of Alaska gave the necessary notification to the federal government, the notification of opting out. So what we're faced with is that if a decision isn't made by the end of this year, the opportunity for opting out is lost. And I guess if you wanted to do it, you'd have to give notice again. You go through this two-year hassle and then I guess have a chance again. But in any case, our time is up at the end of this year. We have to tell, the state of Alaska has to tell the government, the federal government, that we're going to do it by the end of this year or we lose the opportunity to opt out. I'm not sure what the governor's position, the administration's position is on that. I think from some of the information available to me that at least some of his advisors are probably inclined not to opt out of Social Security. I know that among state employee groups, there are some that are extremely strong for opting out. I'm sure they'll make the information available to you, but they present what is, I think, a very convincing case for doing so. Quite truthfully, to tell you where I'm at on the thing, I'm not 100% sure in my mind yet what we should do. But as I mentioned earlier, in a sense, that doesn't matter because I don't think that I ought to be making that decision. I think that the guys that are supplying their bucks and paying into Social Security at this time should make the decision as whether they want to continue in Social Security or whether they want to take those same dollars that they're paying in and the same dollars that the state pays in and enrich the PERS system. And that's what this bill would do. The bill would be subject to a vote of all of the state employees in the state of Alaska. Anybody that currently pays into Social Security that's on the state payroll would have a vote in this matter. If the decision is made to opt out, a committee would be set up, made up of representatives of the various associations and unions that represent the state employees, and also the retirement division. That committee would then meet and make recommendations as to the best ways to enrich the retirement system. And at this stage of the game, it would be premature and probably be divisionary, as a matter of fact, to say what those enrichments would be. There's a lot of opportunities. You could do it by increasing the percentile on which retirement is based. Right now it's at 2%. You could raise it to 2.5 or 3 or whatever the dollar equivalent would allow you to do. There's just a whole lot of things you could do. But it's premature to say that that's what we would do. That would be up to the committee as far as recommendations concerned, and then it would be up to us as a legislature in the next session to make the final decision in the matter. All this really does is sets up the procedure for the election, and then if the election votes are positive, as if it's yes, it sets up this committee and also sets up some interim machinery to keep everything moving, and it sets up what you might call sort of an escrow savings account. I mean, it really isn't that, but you can think of it in those terms, an escrow savings account into which the state makes contributions that it otherwise would have made to Social Security, and those dollars would also become available then. I think there are people here from several employer groups that probably want to be heard on this question. This is all I've got on it right now, but I just emphasize in closing again that we won't be making the decision. We will be letting the people who are actually paying the bucks make the decision.
Hey, were there any questions of Mike? Okay. Thank you. I guess we'll hear from the state employees first. Seems to be the most relevant, so. Everybody give their name and who they work for the record.
Diane Bergstrom with the Alaska Public Employees Association. And we represent between 6,000 and 7,000 of the state workers who would be affected by this bill. And we are in support of it for basically two reasons. One is we feel that the decision to withdraw from Social Security should be made by the employees themselves. They are the ones who have a vested interest, have the most to gain or lose. And I feel that it rightfully belongs to them. And secondly, we are in support of this because we feel very strongly that all funds presently contributed to Social Security should be dedicated to some form of retirement benefit for the employees. Virtually every worker in America can count on his employer and, of course, himself contributing a certain amount to his retirement benefits. This is a benefit that all workers count as their own, rightfully accruing to their employment. And we feel very strongly that state employees have a right to the same consideration, and that all monies currently contributed by the state as an employer and by the employees themselves should be contributed to some retirement benefits to be determined by subsequent legislation. We feel that these two things are the strong points of this legislation, that the employees should have the right to decide how to invest their monies to get the best return in retirement benefits.
Diane, just to start off on sort of a light note, this, the only, I think I mentioned this to you before, it sounds sort of like the radical right is always saying we want to get out of this and that, so it sort of sounds like the John Birchers and wanting to get out of the UN, and now the state employees want to get out of Social Security. I guess that sort of tells you where I'm coming from.
I thought you were looking ahead, not
really. Oh, yeah. Of course, I realize that the state or public employees don't have any, it's not their fault that the federal laws aren't broader, but could you address the what appears to me the uniqueness of this, the federal law allows a unique and special class of citizenry to exist with this opting out provision for public employees. How do you see that in sort of the...
Well, I think you have to remember that it's not the employees who opt out, it is the employer who opts out. And it's not so much that the employees are in a special class, but that the employer, as a state government, is in a special class. And the employer is allowed a number of special privileges, and this is one of them. Not simply to opt out, but the question whether the federal government can require a state to pay federal taxes. And I think that is a privilege, and if you want to call it a loophole, that rightfully belongs to state governments.
I guess I should be asking that question of the governor. I guess he's already exercised some sort of memo tip-off to putting on notice to the federal government that the state of Alaska is going to opt out.
His letter of intent will, in effect, withdraw state employees, the state, from federal old agency at the end of this year. He can, of course, withdraw his letter of intent.
Thank you. Just as a note to counsel, maybe we can get a copy of that letter. To your knowledge, just if you happen to know, did he contact through any of his participatory groups? Did he ever raise that question to your knowledge?
Yes, he did. If I could introduce Mike Murray, who was privy to some of those communications, perhaps he could speak to this. The governor's.
Yes. What happened? The way it got started is the last contract that just expired between the general government, union employees, and the state of Alaska. One of the provisions, page 32, article 32, was that the state and APA jointly conduct a study to determine whether or not it's desirable to terminate participation in the Social Security system. At every convention that I can recall since I've been in APA, and I've been an employee for 16 years, resolutions have been passed and everything to do that. Make an attempt to see whether or not it was a good idea to get out of Social Security. So when one of the provisions in that last contract that we negotiated was that state and APA conduct a study, the study was conducted at that time. Prior to making the study, the governor gave notice of termination, and it was all part of this contract negotiations. Since that time, APA formed a committee to investigate whether or not it was desirable, and we have proceeded to have done that. At the same time, state produced the progress report, and that's where it is right now. Right now, we're on the downhill leg of the 2-year notice to give it. We will be out of Social Security at the end of this year unless the governor notifies the Social Security Administration otherwise. At the time that, as I recall, at the time the governor gave notification to the Social Social Security Administration. APA presented the administration with a list of signatures of several thousand state employees that wanted him to do that. We have conducted surveys over the years. The last survey we took was only a few months ago of 1,500 state employees, and 1,000 of those, two-thirds of those employees, said they wanted to withdraw from Social Security system. So that's what we're doing. We're proceeding along with having this legislation drafted, and we're putting our reports, and we're mailing out over 5,000 or 6,000 copies of the reports prepared by APA on the advantages of withdrawal from Social Security. It's in the mail right now.
Mike, when the governor notified the federal government by letter that the state was exercising its option, was he doing that under time constraints?
He notified them that he was giving them the 2-year notification. That's all I know. I don't know.
Okay. Best addressed to him or his office. Right. Mr. McKinnon had a question.
What are the rates at which contributions are now made by both the employer and the employees, Social Security?
5.85%.
By both?
By both, yes. And it's scheduled to rise this next year to 6.05.
And what are the current rates on
the PERS? The employee contributes 4.25%, and the employer contributes whatever is necessary to fund the benefits, as I understand. Mr. Gates can undoubtedly speak to this.
Under this, assuming we withdraw from Social Security, then those contributions are made into PERS.
Correct. Well, and into some form of retirement benefit.
And those will be, say, for the employee who doesn't become vested, then he withdraws that money from the system as he does any other.
Yes.
And there's no way, let's say, the employee who doesn't become vested, let's say, works 4 years for the state, and then state employment. Is there any way for him to buy in Social Security for those 4 years that he missed?
I don't believe that there is.
So,
Ms. Dankworth?
Yeah, so I'll get more familiar. We discussed this years ago as to whether we ought to switch over or not. I don't remember how the arguments went. But all these benefits that I see Social Security giving now to mothers that have two children to raise, they can get an advance payment to raise their children and everything. Is that going to be, y'all visualize those kind of benefits being administered by the ERS system?
Much of this is outlined in the report that the Committee on Social Security Withdrawal has prepared, and the conclusion of that report is that reinvesting the now Social Security contributions into PERS would enable us to provide survivors benefits and disability benefits at least comparable to what Social Security offers. And I might add also that one of the things that we find strongest support among our members for is the fact that Social Security and PERS operate on two different principles. The difference between the Social Security benefits, minimum and maximum, is really very small. Right now it's about $200. So regardless of the amount of money you pay in Social Security taxes, you don't get a benefit comparable, really, to what you pay. And in PERS, you do get what you pay for. And Social Security is really becoming a kind of welfare taxation, which are the taxes that we pay are being handed over to today's retired people. And the state employees support the idea that their money is going to be invested and will work for them, and what they draw will be directly commensurate with what they made as state employees and how long they worked.
Well, then, if I work for the state now and I work for them for 5 years or 7 years, and by under this plan, you can't belong to both. I mean, all state employees will just have to, if you go to work in the state, you can't be part of the Social Security system. Is that
no, that's correct. But if you already have your 40 quarters of eligibility in, or whatever eligibility you have in, however many quarters, you don't lose those. You can't lose anything under Social Security. It would still be there. And if, say, a state employee retired at age 55, and didn't want to just sit home idle, he could go to work for a private employer and work 10 years and again have enough eligibility to secure a Social Security benefit.
Well, the average person, like a housewife or somebody, gets a state job or what she's thinking, works 5, 6, 7 years, and then she gets married or something, how does she get back into Social Security, and did she lose that 7 years?
Well, in a sense, she's lost the 7 years, but she gets back into Social Security just by going to work for an employer who participates in it.
She'd have to go 7 years, well, not necessarily, she'd just have to get her quarters.
Just to get her quarters in. It's not the employees who withdraw, it's the employer. And so an employee can be in or out of the system depending on who he works for. If he works for a participating employer, then he's in the Social Security system. If he works for a non-participating employer, then he is not in.
Well, if you're not, are you going to give more benefits? Do y'all plan to give more benefits than they get under Social Security?
Well, that is kind of a complex and detailed question, and I think probably Mike could speak to that. But the legislation that's before you, although I would say generally yes, if we reinvested those funds, APEA feels that we could derive better benefits, both for retirement, survivors, and disability. We could derive better benefits under PERS, but the legislation only speaks to investing the funds, not and how they would be invested specifically, but just dedicating them to retirement benefits.
Well, the 5.8% that we're paying in now, would that go into another fund? Is that a separate fund than what our retirement fund is?
Well,
is all this money going to be put in one deal? Or
the legislation doesn't speak to that specifically. It's just held in an escrow account.
So if you put it all in one fund, and the fact that the taxpayer picks up a great portion of the retirement to make it, whatever benefits come along, we pick up the tab, the taxpayer to keep that balance. That kind of takes the lid off of what you can dream up as benefits, but it's not dream up. That's not dream up. But I mean, I can see that it would cost quite a bit in the future if all these benefits started coming in.
Well,
otherwise, if we handled by 5 and 8, 5 and 8, 10%, was in a separate fund, and you could invest that fund and get more benefits, that would make a lot of sense.
That would help. I think another thing that you might want to think about is that over the past 10 or 15 years, both the taxable wage base and the tax rate itself have been escalating almost on an annual basis, and that the employer can count on increasing contributions. And that this legislation just dedicates the 5.85%.
I understand that. Most of my questions have nothing to do with this bill, because that's not what it's addressed except to. I'm just getting an education.
Mr. Miles, Chip?
Yeah. Okay. Dan, what's been the history of other major governmental agencies that have chosen to opt out of Social Security?
Well, far more smaller local governments, municipalities, have elected to opt out than states. And the research that we have done indicates that going with their own retirement systems, investing the funds into their own retirement systems, they do get a really much greater return on their money. Of course, I have read also research that says, well, the funding of those retirement systems is jeopardized this way and that way and the other. It is a very complex question, but under the data that I have seen, San Jose comes to mind in California, and the city employees opted out, and they're getting remarkably better benefits for the money that they are putting in. One of the things you probably read recently that New York City decided not to opt out, and it was very clear that their intention, the employer's intention, was to opt out of Social Security and to entirely save the employer's contribution to put it back in the general fund. And when they realized that the employees were hardly going to continue to go to work when they were going to do that, they decided not to opt out. The employees of New York City, however, are still studying the issue, seeing the merit in it.
Have any state government?
Yes, several have.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't have the list with me today. Three or four.
Similar results, though?
Yes.
Chris?
I of course talked to you yesterday about that. But, did you get the statistical information? Not being here for the last 15 minutes, I don't know if you did.
I'm sorry, I don't have a breakdown on the development of Social Security over the last 10 years.
One other question, just out of curiosity, if for some reason the APEA, where the teachers all of a sudden came in and took over the state employees, that's in my case, certainly hope that that's not going to happen, but if they did, required to go into this same program any other union agency, and I'm addressing that if I might have the answer there.
Well, I suppose that perhaps Mr. Gates could speak more effectively to the issue of what would happen to the retirement system if another union with its own retirement